The dream was gone before she opened her eyes, but the shape of it stayed. A face. A cave. A cold that had no season. Kale lay still and let the morning find her. Gray light crept across the ceiling beams. Below, her mother's hands were already moving at the hearth, iron on iron, the small measured clatter the Dales woke to, the way they had woken for all of Kale's 19 years. She did not try to pull the dream back. She knew better. Dreams of her father came less often now, and each time one came it cost her the rest of the morning, and there was laundry to do and bread to carry and a festival to get through before the day was done. Palm flat against her sternum, she pressed. The habit was older than she could remember, press down, keep it small. Something in her chest had hummed since she was a child, a note she had never learned to name, and the first thing her father ever taught her, the only thing, really, before the fall that took him, was to keep it quiet. Don't sing it out, Kay. Not where anyone can hear. She had kept it so quiet she had almost forgotten the shape of it, like a word on the tip of the tongue that you stop trying to say. She rose. The floorboards were cold. Dressing in the half-dark, wool dress, boots worn thin at the heel, the belt her father had hammered out of river iron the winter she was 7. The belt went on without thought, the way all old things go on without thought. Outside, the air smelled of wood smoke and wet grass. Dawn in the Dales came slow and amber, and the hills folded around the village like a held breath. Kale stood on the threshold a moment. Not to look. To listen. The green was waking. The baker's shutter banged. Two voices traded something across the lane, a joke, by the sound of the laugh. A dog, then a second dog, then silence. And under it all, untouched by any of it, the echo node. The node had hummed all her life, a note so deep it was almost a pressure in the ground, so constant she had long ago stopped hearing it the way you stop hearing your own heartbeat. This morning she heard it. This morning the sound found her differently, as if the distance between her chest and the green had collapsed, and the stone was humming with her rather than beside her. Her hand went to her mouth. The old habit again. She dropped it. From the hearth, her mother's voice, muffled by the wall.
Kale? Up yet?
From the kitchen.
Yes.
Come eat before it's cold.
The words were ordinary. The morning was ordinary. Only the dream and the hum were not, and Kale had spent 19 years learning to let both pass through her without touching. She fetched the water, banked the fire, and set about the day the way you set about any day when you know exactly what it will hold. The festival of naming was today. Children would be named at the node, the elders would speak the old words, the stone would glow its faint, familiar answer. Kale would carry bread, smile at neighbors, and stand at the edge of the green with her hands full of something to carry so no one would notice her listening. She had never wanted anything else. The Dales were small and poor and ignored by the empires beyond the hills, and that was the point. Here, everyone knew her name and her mother's name and her father's name, which was dead now but still spoken at lamplight. Here, silence was a language, and she was fluent. The hum in her chest went on, steady as the stones. She went inside to eat before her mother called her a third time, and the dream went back down where it lived, and the morning held its ordinary shape. Only once, at the table, with her spoon halfway to her mouth, Kale caught herself about to hum along with the node. She stopped. She swallowed. She pressed her palm flat against her sternum, and the note sank back into whatever dark kept it, and she told herself, as she had told herself 1,000 times, that the humming in her chest was nothing but the sound of her own blood moving. She almost believed it. Her mother stood at the hearth with her back to the room, stirring. A small woman, gray-streaked, with shoulders that had learned to carry things without complaint, a husband's death, a daughter's silences, the long arithmetic of a life lived on little. She did not turn when Kale sat down.
Sleep badly?
Same as always.
You were calling out.
Not a question. Lena could do that, make a statement land like a hook and wait for the fish.
I wasn't.
You were.
She turned, spoon in hand, and looked at Kale the way she looked at a fever, clinically, from a place of long practice.
It's the festival. You always dream before the festival.
Kale stirred her porridge. The bowl was warm, the kitchen was warm, the wall hanging her grandmother had woven held the corner of the room together in faded reds and greens. Everything as it had always been.
The festival doesn't make me dream.
Your father dreamed before the naming. Every year. Said the stone talked to him in his sleep.
Lena's eyes stayed on her daughter.
Then he'd wake up and tell me the weather was wrong, and it always was.
Kale said nothing. The stone had not talked to her in sleep. Not ever. It was the other way around. She had dreamed of the cave, of the cold, of a sound she had made that had done nothing. The telling had become the memory, and she had stopped being able to reach what was underneath it.
Today's naming is the first without Elder Venn.
Lena said, back to her stirring.
Marin takes the circle alone. He asked me to mind the children's line if he falters.
A pause.
And you, the bread.
I'll carry the bread.
That's all you'll carry?
The question hung. Kale kept her eyes on the porridge. Across the room, the hearth fire ticked, somewhere in the walls, the house settled, beneath her ribs, the note she never named went on humming, patient, waiting for her to stop pressing it down.
I don't know what you mean, she said.
Yes, you do.
Kale looked up. Her mother's face had the particular stillness of someone who has been holding a sentence for a long time and has decided, this morning, to put it down.
You carry too much quiet, girl.
Lena's voice was soft, and the words landed harder than they should have.
The world has enough silence without you adding to it.
For a long moment neither of them moved. Kale felt the sentence go through her like a draft through a room. It found the places she had boarded up, the note under her palm, the dream with the cave and the cold, the 19 years of held breath. Her mother did not know about any of it. Her mother knew anyway.
Father used to say the stone remembered everyone.
Kale said, because saying something was better than saying nothing.
Even the ones who left. Even the ones who died.
He did. He believed it all his life.
Lena folded her arms.
You're not the ones who died, Kay. You're the ones still here. And you sound like a room with all the doors shut.
The word doors caught in Kale's throat. She put her spoon down. Her hand went to her sternum before she could stop it, and she pressed, and she saw her mother's eyes follow the gesture and hold there.
It's nothing.
Kale said.
I'm fine. I'll take the bread and I'll stand at the edge and I'll not dream tomorrow. There's nothing wrong.
Lena looked at her for another breath. Then she turned back to the hearth, and the moment closed, the way moments in the Dales closed, not with a door slammed but with someone getting on with the day.
We'll see.
Her mother said quietly.
The stone knows who's been keeping its song company. It'll have its say today, one way or another.
She said it like a joke. Kale laughed the way she always laughed, a dry caught sound with nothing behind it, and carried the firewood in and the water out. And all morning the note in her chest went on humming, and she went on pressing it down, and she did not once let it out. The festival bell rang at the ninth hour. From the green, the echo node's long, low answer rolled up the lane like a tide coming in. Kale lifted the bread tray. She went out to meet it. 3 hours later the green was full of people and the echo node was humming just loudly enough to be ordinary. The festival had its own rhythm, older than anyone in the Dales, and Kale knew it the way she knew the shape of her own hands. Children lined up by age, smallest first, hair combed to a shine their mothers would not recognize by midday. Elders arranged themselves in a loose crescent around the stone, walking sticks planted like the roots of old trees. The food went out of bread still warm, honey from the high pastures, the sharp cheese from the thin milk goats. And then the naming would begin. Kale carried the tray through the crowd, making sure everyone had eaten before the ceremony. Feed the body before you name the soul. She passed Elder Marin, adjusting the ceremonial shawl over his thin shoulders, and he grinned at her with all the teeth he had left.
Brought enough for the whole valley?
The whole valley is here,
she said.
I hope so.
His laugh was a dry rattle. He had been naming children since before Kale was born. His hands shook at rest, but everyone noticed, and everyone pretended not to, that they went steady as river stone the moment they touched the node. Further down the crescent, Hainel watched the green with an old man's patience, his lips moving in a tune too quiet to carry. Kale's father's closest friend, he had been the one to carry the news up from the river valley, 10 years ago, and he had never once spoken of it since. He caught her eye and nodded, the way he nodded at everyone, and went on with his small silent whistling. She had never heard him sing. She had never heard him say her name, come to think of it, though he said everyone's else's freely. He was simply there, like the hills, like the stone. A young man stood at the edge of the green, a head taller than the crowd around him, arms crossed, watching the green the way a man watches a field he is about to cross, measuring, quiet, already moving in his mind. Kale caught his eye and he nodded, once, a greeting as familiar as the stone. Torn. Her father's best friend's son, a year older than her, built of the same silent stuff the Dales produced when it wanted a man who would say little and do what he said. She raised a hand, he raised one back. They had not spoken in months. There was nothing to say. The Dales did not need words between people who had known each other their whole lives. In their line, the children fidgeted. Their mothers shushed. Sun climbed past the meeting hall roof and laid gold across the green, turning the dust motes into tiny lights. A dog barked. A baby cried and was comforted. The Dales were small, poor, ignored by everyone who mattered in the wider world, and Kale had never wanted anything else. This was the life. This green, these names, this stone humming its one note under the summer heat. It would still be here when she was old, and her children would be named on it, and their children after. She settled at the edge of the crowd, tray empty, hands loose. The hum of the node came up through the soles of her feet, through the packed earth, steady and deep. Same note it had sung at her own naming. Same note it had sung the morning her father died, 10 years gone, the low pulse of the world not caring that one man had fallen. She had stood on this green that day too and felt it, the terrible constancy of it, and she had thought, it doesn't stop. Nothing stops it. Elder Marin raised his arms. The crowd quieted. The first child was led forward, a girl of 2 winters, held up by her mother, round-faced and solemn, staring at the stone with the concentration of a cat.
The world names its children,
Marin intoned.
And the world forgets. But the stone remembers. Say her name, and the stone holds it.
Ellen, the mother said. Daughter of Sabine. Marin turned to the stone. His hand went out, steady, riverstone steady, and settled flat against the gray flank. The hum continued, unchanged, a bass note walking under the voice. Before her mother's hand on her crown could press her forward, Kale felt it. The hum dipped. Not much. A fraction of a tone, the way a note wavers when a bough is lifted from a string. The elders did not notice. The crowd did not notice. But Kale's chest went tight, and the note in her ribs, the one she pressed down, the one she had pressed down since her father's hand had gone slack in a cave she never spoke of, shuddered against her sternum like a bird against a cage.
Ellen,
Marin repeated, louder, as if volume might restore what the stone had begun to lose.
Daughter of Sabine. The stone remembers. We have spoken it, hold it, stone.
The hum steadied. Kale let out breath she had not known she was holding. The moment passed, the same moment she had passed 100 times, the false alarm, the trick of a morning's nerves. The stone glowed faintly as it always did at a naming, a soft amber that came and went in the stone's own time, and the crowd murmured its pleasure, and the next child came forward, and the next. But Kale stayed at the edge of the green with her arms crossed over her chest, pressing, while the note in her ribs hummed a question the stone had not answered. She told herself it was nothing. She told herself the way she told herself everything, firmly, once, with her palm flat against her sternum. And below her feet, for just a breath, the world's deep note wavered again. Elder Marin lifted the sixth child, a boy named Fen, 3 winters old, already crying for his mother, and turned to the stone with the same worn ceremony, the same steady hand.
"Hear this name,"
he said.
"Hold this name. The world forgets, but you remember."
The hum stopped. One instant it was there, that deep familiar pulse in the ground, in the soles of Kale's feet, in the marrow of her bones. And then it was not, and the silence that replaced it was not an absence. It was a hole. The sound of the green drained into it. The children's chatter, the mother's shushing, the dry rattle of a distant laugh, all of it fell into the stillness like water into a crack and vanished. For one long breath the world held absolutely still, and everyone on the green felt the shift the way you feel a stair missing in the dark, a sudden, vertiginous knowledge that the ground was not where you left it. Marin's hand stayed flat on the stone. He spoke the words again.
"Hold this name, stone."
Nothing. He struck the gray flank with his palm, once, the way a herdsman strikes a door he knows is occupied. The stone was warm, Kale could see the heat rising off it in the sun, but it made no sound. No note. No answer. It was a rock, suddenly, and nothing more, a gray boulder that had hummed their lives into shape and had gone, without warning, unutterably dead.
"The naming is observed,"
Marin said, but his voice shook, and the words caught in the crowd's stillness.
"The stone is the stone."
The oldest Dalesfolk came forward, the ones who remembered the stone when it had thrummed loud enough to shake the window glass. They touched it. They leaned on it. One old woman pressed her ear to the flank the way you press an ear to a sleeping chest, and came away with her mouth open, her eyes gone wide and old. And Kale felt it in her chest like a blow. Not the loss, she had felt that first, the hole where the note had been. This was different. This was a pressure, building. The note that had lived pressed down under her palm her whole life suddenly surging against the cage of her ribs as if the stone silence had opened a door in her and the thing inside was shoving itself out. Don't, her hand was clamped over her mouth. She had done it without knowing. The pressure built anyway, through her palms, through her teeth, a sound with no words behind it, older than words, and the elders turned, and Marin turned, and the whole green turned to look at her, and she opened her mouth and it came out. One note. Not loud. That was the terrible, beautiful thing. It was not loud. It was there, a pure, clear tone that cut through the stunned silence of the green like light through cloud, so present that the air itself leaned toward it. And the response came up through her feet. The ground answered. A pulse, not sound, a resonance, ran up through the packed earth, up her shins, her spine, her teeth, and into the stone. Marin's hand flew back as if stung. The echo node lit from within, a bloom of amber light that raced through its gray veins like blood returning to a sleeping heart, and the hum came back, louder than it had any right to be, deeper, a note that shook the water in the troughs and set the dogs howling. Then the green erupted. Around the stone, the oldest Dalesfolk wept great, gulping, unashamed tears. The children stared, some delighted, some frightened. Mothers crossed themselves against the old signs. And Elder Marin, who had named children for 60 years, looked at the glowing stone, then at Kale, and went very slowly to his knees.
"Kale of the Dales,"
he whispered.
"What have you done?"
Her hand was still over her mouth. The note was still dying in the air. She could feel it leaving the stone, the resonance draining out, the amber fading back to gray, the stone settling, satisfied, back into its ordinary hum, but a changed hum, a smugly present note that had been absent a moment ago.
"Nothing,"
she said, muffled, through her fingers.
I don't, it wasn't me."
The crowd was still staring. Marin was still on his knees. And somewhere in the back, a stranger's face, a traveling merchant or a Larkspur courier, was already turning away from the green, already walking toward the road that led down out of the dales, toward Valdris, toward the priesthood that had made it a crime to sing. Kale turned and ran. She ran until her lungs burned and the green was a distant murmur below her, and then she sat down on the ridge above the village and put her head between her knees and tried to make her hands stop shaking. The note was gone. The pressure in her chest had collapsed like a pricked bladder, leaving nothing behind but a hollow ache and the taste of copper. She had not planned it. She had not wanted it. She had been holding it down for 19 years, she had been good at holding it down, and one dead stone, one hole in the world, and the thing had simply walked out of her without asking permission. She tried to hum. Deliberately. A closed throat exercise, the way her mother hummed while she swept. Nothing came. Not a note, not a squeak. Just breath, moving in and out of her mouth like it was passing through an empty room. Did I imagine it? But the stone had answered. She had felt the answer in her teeth. The whole green had seen the amber run up through its veins like blood. The memory came up then, unbidden, the way it always came when her throat ached, a cave, cold water dripping, the wet breath of something large and wrong. Her father's hand going slack. A sound she had made, she could never remember what it sounded like, only that it had been hers, and that afterwards there was nothing but the drip of water and her own hand in her father's cold one. The song is dangerous, she told herself, the old sentence, the one that lived in her bones. If I sing too loudly, I will hurt someone. She had hurt no one today. She had helped. The stone was humming again, alive, better than it had been in years. And that was the worst part, because it meant the thing she had pressed down her whole life was not a sickness. It was a door she had been standing in front of for 19 years, refusing to turn the handle.
I will not sing again.
She said aloud, to the hills, to the memory of her father, to the note still humming in the stone below.
I will pretend it did not happen. It did not happen.
The hills did not argue. That was the thing about the dales, they let you keep your secrets. They had kept hers for 19 years. A creak of grass behind her. Her mother sat down, not close enough to touch, close enough to be company. She did not speak. She sat with her knees pulled up under her apron and looked out over the village the way she had looked out over it the day her husband's body was carried up from the river valley, and Kale felt the old grief move between them like a third person, and for a long time neither of them said anything at all.
Maren's knees are going to hurt tomorrow,
Lena said finally.
60 years he's named children. First time he's knelt.
To a stone.
To a song.
Her mother's voice was even, unhurried.
You sang, Kay. I heard it from the door of the house. I heard the stone answer. You cannot unsay a thing that made the whole green weep.
Then I'll learn a new way to not say it.
Lena was quiet for a moment. Then,
your father knew a woman who could speak to the stones. When I was a girl, they called her the Whistler, and she had a tune for every roof that needed mending. She disappeared the summer you were born.
A pause.
The priesthood came for her.
Kale said nothing. The word priesthood sat between them, heavy, patient. She had grown up with the stories, the burned scrolls, the sealed doors, the way a song could be a crime and the dales chose silence as the price of safety.
There used to be a man,
Lena said, quieter now, almost to herself.
A scholar in Thren. Dirin was his name. Your father's father's people used to speak of him when I was a girl, read the old texts, the ones the priesthood burned. He could tell you what the stone's silence means. He could tell you what you are.
The words hung between them.
If he's still alive.
Kale let the name settle. Dirin. She turned it over in her mind, held it to the light the way she might examine a stone she picked up from the riverbed. She did not say anything. She did not need to.
I'm not going anywhere,
she said.
No.
Her mother agreed.
You're not.
She said it like a woman holding her breath, and then she stood up, brushed the grass from her apron, and went back down the ridge to the village that was waiting for its bread. Kale sat alone on the edge of the hills a long time. Below her, the echo node went on humming its ordinary, restored note. Her throat ached. The cave waited behind her eyes, patient as her mother, and the sentence she had spoken to the hills, "It did not happen," sounded already like a lie. She pressed her palm to her sternum and held the note in. She was very good at it. She was not going anywhere. The stranger arrived the way bad news arrives in the dales, with the morning, with the rain, with two farmers on either side of her like a gate that had closed around something valuable. Kale came back from the well to find horses at the door, not Dale's horses, tall and lathered, the kind that came down the valley road from the river ports, and a woman sitting on the stoop of the healer's house with her torn sailcloth spread over her knees like a map of the sea. The woman was dark-skinned, sun-bleached hair pulled back off a face that had been planed by salt and wind. Her hands moved even at rest, measuring, checking, the fingers of a woman who had spent her life at a tiller or a ledger. She looked at Kale the way you look at a cargo manifest, quickly, thoroughly, and with a professional interest that took no prisoners.
"So you're the one,"
she said. Kale stopped mid-stride.
"The one what?"
"The one who made the stone sing."
The woman's voice was dry, amused, certain.
"Farmers talk, girl. 2 days I've been mending my wreck in this village, and I've heard more about your note than I've heard about the weather."
She held out a hand.
"Valani, late of the tide kind, which is currently sitting keel up in your river, which is why I'm here instead of in Thren with a cargo of sun iron."
Kale did not take the hand.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Your mother's told me the same lie 3 times this morning. She's better at it than you."
Valani shrugged, unoffended, and went back to her sailcloth.
"I'm not here to make you an offer you need to refuse. I'm here because the road out of the dales is shorter than you think, and I'm leaving at first light, and I don't make a habit of leaving people behind who are about to be collected."
"Collected?"
"By the priesthood."
Valani said it like it was the weather.
"Your stone made a sound that people heard in 3 valleys. What do you think they heard it as?"
She looked up, and for the first time her eyes were not amused at all.
"A memory keeper. That's what they'll call you. They have a list for people like you. It's not a friendly list."
The word memory keeper went through Kale like cold water. She had heard it once, whispered by the elders when they thought the children asleep, a word from the old stories, from before the silence, from the burned scrolls.
"I'm not anything,"
she said.
"I carried bread. I stood at the edge. Whatever the stone did, it wasn't."
"It was you. I've seen a memory keeper's work before. 3 of them, in the islands, before the priesthood's men took them."
Valani folded the sailcloth with an economy that made Kale's silence feel like an expensive thing.
"I know what you are. I know what you're not. You're not a curse."
The words hung in the rain-smelling air. Kale's hand had gone to her sternum without her noticing. She dropped it.
"Why are you here?"
she asked.
"You don't know me."
"I need passage home. There are people who would pay passage for a memory keeper's protection on the road, and I mean that kindly, girl, not as a trade in flesh."
Valani stood, and she was taller than Kale had expected, and her eyes were older.
"You need to be somewhere else before the priesthood arrives. I need to be somewhere else before the river freezes. That's a trade. You don't have to like me, and I don't have to like you, and we can disagree all the way to Thren. But you can't stay here. City of 10,000 lights. 1/2 month's walk, most of it downhill."
A thin smile.
"Big enough to hide in. Big enough that a girl who can make stones sing is just another rumor."
Kale shook her head. The refusal came from a place older than thought, the hills, the green, the hum of the restored stone, the shape of her life, which was here, bounded by hills she could name.
"No. I'm not leaving. I'm not anything, I told you. I'll go home and..."
"You'll what? Marry a herdsman? Sing at children's namings until someone writes to Valdris?"
Valani's voice was not unkind, but it was flat, the way a rock is flat.
The note you made was heard. That's not a secret you can take back. The priesthood collects what makes noise, Kale of the Dales. They hold it, or they silence it, and neither option involves you standing at the edge of a green with a tray of bread.
Behind her, in the doorway, Kale saw her mother. Lena had come out silently, and her face was the color of the ash dawn, and she was not looking at Valani. She was looking at Kale with the old, careful, holding her breath look. Her mother said softly,
"Don't tell me there's nothing to decide."
A horse's hooves on the lane, fast. Kale turned, and a messenger was there, bent over the neck of a lathered bay, reining in hard outside the healer's door. He slid off before the horse had stopped, his face white. "The node," he gasped. "The green, the stone, someone saw the light from the pass. They've sent word to the valley road. There are scouts, Valdris scouts, gray tunics, taking names at the crossroads." The rain chose that moment to start, fat drops hammering the lane, and Kale stood in it with her hands empty, and the hum in her chest went on, and she felt the door of her life closing with a sound she could not hear. Night came down early with the rain, and the dales went quiet the way a village goes quiet when it is pretending not to be afraid. Kale could not sleep. The dream had not come, no cave, no cold, no father, and she lay in the dark listening to the rain on the roof, the note in her chest humming its old, steady, patient tune, and tried to make her hands settle. On the other side of the house, her mother's lamp went out. Peace, or the pretense of it. She got up. She told herself it was the rain, the wind, the shape of the day. She did not tell herself the real thing, which was that a woman at her mother's table had named her out loud, Memory Keeper, and the word was still inside her, glowing, refusing to be unthought. Valani was not where they had left her. The healer's workroom was empty, the cot unslept. Kale followed the light, a thin candle glow through the back door, under the eaves, where the storm was held off by a worn stretch of roof. Valani sat on a grain chest with the torn sailcloth spread across her knees, mending it by candlelight with the tiny, terrible patience of a woman stitching her way home one length of thread at a time. Her needle flashed, the candle guttered, the rain hammered the shingles overhead. Kale stood in the doorway.
"You should sleep."
The needle went in, came out.
"Ship's on its back in the river. Every hour I lie down, I see it keeling over a little more."
A pause.
"Also, you're standing in my light."
Kale did not move.
"Why do you care?"
"About what?"
"About me. About any of it. You said it yourself, it's a trade. I've got nothing to trade. I'm not going anywhere. And you're still sitting here mending a sail you can't use in the rain, telling a girl she's not a curse."
The words came out sharper than she'd meant, and the note in her chest rose with them, and she pressed her palm flat against her sternum and held it. Valani's needle stopped. For a long moment she looked at the sailcloth, at the candle, at the rain-dark night beyond the eaves. When she spoke, her voice had lost its dry edge.
"I heard about what you did,"
she said.
"And I believed it. That's rarer than you think, people who hear something true and don't argue with it. I am one of those."
She looked up.
"I don't know what you are. I told you that, and I meant it. But I know what you're not."
A beat.
"You are not a curse."
The words sat between them. Kale's hand was still pressed to her sternum. She could feel the note under her palm, and for the first time in 19 years, she did not push it down.
"I sang once,"
Kale said.
"When I was 9. There was..."
She stopped. The cave rose behind her eyes, cold, patient.
"There was an accident. In the caves. I tried to sing too, I thought I could."
Her throat closed.
"It didn't help. It was my fault it didn't help. So I stopped."
Valani looked at her a long time. Then she looked back at the sailcloth, and her needle went in, came out, and she said, very quietly,
"A woman in my clan used to say that songs are like ships. The ones we lose teach us the most about sailing.
She tied off a stitch.
You're 9, Kil. 9-year-olds don't sink ships. They just don't know the water yet.
The rain hammered. The candle burned. Kale stood in the doorway without a word, and the note in her chest did not rise and did not fall, and for a moment she did not know what to do with the silence, because no one had ever filled it for her before. She went back to bed. She did not sleep, but the dream came anyway, softer this time. Her father, younger, by the light of the old hearth, his mouth moving, shaping a word she could not hear. She woke with it on her tongue, a single syllable, not Ephron, older, and the shape of it dissolved before she could hold it, and she lay in the dark repeating it to herself until the dawn found her. It had meant something. She was sure of it. The Valdris scout was spotted at the next valley crossing at first light, gray tunic, silver badge, moving downhill toward the village with the unhurried purpose of a man who has a name to take. Valani did not wait for permission. She was at the door before Kale had finished dressing, a pack in each hand, the mended sailcloth rolled under her arm.
One argument with your mother, and then we go. Out the back. The river path, not the road.
He might just be a traveler.
Gray tunic. Silver badge. At the valley crossing, 3 hours after your stone woke up.
Valani's voice was flat.
He's not a traveler, and we're not going to be a story.
Lena came to the door. She looked at the pack in Kale's hands, at Valani's loaded shoulders, and her face did the old thing, drew itself inward, held its breath, and Kale saw the argument building behind her eyes before it arrived.
Ma,
Lena's voice was tight, controlled.
I've been waiting for this morning since you were 9 years old. I just never knew what it would look like.
She looked at Valani, and her eyes were wet and hard at the same time.
3 minutes. You gave her 3 minutes, a trifle's worth of time, for a life's worth of road, and if any harm comes to her on that road, traitor, I will walk to Thren myself and find you.
Valani nodded once. Then Lena hugged her daughter, one quick, fierce, breathtaking compression, the kind that does not ask permission, and said into Kale's hair.
You carry too much quiet, girl. Don't you dare add to the worlds. Go. Go before I remember I'm a mother and tell them both to stay.
Kale went. Out the back door, across the wet garden, through the gap in the rowan hedge that had been a child's shortcut and was now, abruptly, a woman's escape. She did not look back. She had learned, in the dark before dawn, that some doors close by themselves, and the sound they make is the sound of a hand sliding off a handle. They went down the river path, then up onto the ridge road, where the dales fell away behind them in folds of gray-green hills. Kale knew every tree, every stone wall, every farmhouse that released wood smoke into the damp morning air. She had known them her whole life. She had never seen them this way, as cover, as risk, as a road that did not curve back. The first days were the hardest because nothing happened. The hills flattened into valley roads that all looked the same. The green faded to pasture, then to scrub. The scrub began to gray. They slept in ditches and barns, and once, memorably, in a shepherd's hut where the owner came back at midnight and Valani talked their way out of being shot with a story about a wedding gone wrong that Kale almost believed. By the eighth day, the walking had stopped being an emergency and become a rhythm of boots, bread, stars, sleep, and by the 11th day Kale realized she had stopped measuring home by the distance back. Valani had stopped walking ahead somewhere in there. Kale had not told her to. She looked up from a ridge one afternoon and found the trader beside her, matching her stride, and could not remember when it had happened. On the 13th evening, they crested a hill of pale gray scrub and the world ahead went flat and white. The Ash Desert. Valani pointed.
That's the crossing. No villages, no shelter, no water worth naming. We go in at dawn, and we do not stop unless we have to.
Kale stood at the edge of it, and the world she had known, hills and lanes, wood smoke, the hum of the stone at the heart of a green, stopped behind her like a door that would not open. The desert was not sand. It was ash, if pale, fine, unutterably dry, the memory of a forest that had burned centuries ago, drifting in constant, soundless motion. The wind was up, and the ash moved in dunes that reformed while you watched, and the silence was so complete that Kale could hear her own pulse in her ears. Not silent, she realized. Silent in meaning. The wind whispered. The ash shifted. But the sounds carried nothing, no birds, no insects, no far-off village bell, no hum of a stone at the heart of a green. The world had gone quiet in a way that made the festival's silence look like a cough. This was the silence of a room that has been empty a long time. Valani walked ahead, reading the dunes with her eyes, checking the stars. She said little. They slept that first night with their backs to a dune's lee, wrapped in the sailcloth, and the silence was so complete Kale could hear her own breath moving in her chest. The second night, she heard her heartbeat too. She lay awake with her palm pressed to her sternum, pressing the note down, pressing, pressing, and somewhere in the dark Valani's voice came, low and even.
You haven't hummed in 2 weeks.
Kale's hand went to her sternum.
I don't hum.
You did. At the stone.
A pause.
And I've watched you stop yourself a dozen times since. Fingers drumming, throat moving, then nothing.
She did not turn.
Why?
Because I don't know what it does.
Kale heard her own voice, flat.
At the stone it woke something. I don't know what. I don't know what I am. I don't want to find out by accident.
Valani nodded, once, as if that were answer enough. They walked on in the ash. She marked the days by the stars, the way Valani marked them by the waterskins. On the fifth night in the ash, Kale counted the nights back to the festival and worked out that a day had passed, somewhere in the walking, that she had forgotten to remember. Her birthday. 20, and the date had gone by in a desert without a single marker, without her mother's hands, without the old song at the hearth. She had not told Valani. She was not sure why she had not told her. She said nothing, and the night went on, and the note in her chest hummed its patient, unanswerable question. The dead bird lay in their path near dusk, a small gray thing, still warm, its wings folded, its throat intact. No blood, no wound, no sign of a predator. Kale picked it up. It was warm. It had died, maybe moments ago, without a mark. She felt the hum rise in her chest, an instinct, the thing she had done at the stone, and she opened her mouth to test it, to see if the note would answer this small, warm death, and nothing came. The hum died in her throat before it reached her lips, the way a word dies when you forget the language. The bird lay warm in her palms. The silence pressed in from all sides, not empty, not absent, but listening, a presence with the patience of stone, bent over her, waiting for her to try again. Kale knelt, and laid the bird down, and pressed her hand flat against the ash beside it. The ash was cold. The bird was warm. And somewhere beneath her palm, she felt it, the first time she had ever felt it clearly, the silence is a shape, a hunger, a thing with weight and direction. The echo node had not failed by accident. The world was sicker than anyone in the Dales had told her. And the sickness had a shape, and the shape had been here, and it had left her a dead bird to find. She stood. She did not tell Valani what she had felt. She did not need to. The traitor had gone still, watching her, and her eyes said she had seen a woman come out of that moment different. They walked two more nights in the ash, and then the desert ended as abruptly as it had begun, a line of scrub, then stone, then the dark shoulder of the world dropping away into a valley full of light. Kale stopped. She had not imagined it. She could not have imagined it. Below her, Thren spread across the valley like a fallen sky. 10,000 windows burned against the dark, a river of lanterns wound through stone canyons, the hum of it, the deep, constant, breathing hum of a city, rose up the slope to meet her, and it was the largest sound she had ever heard, and the loneliest. She had never seen a city. She had never imagined so many people living in one place. The Dales held 100 souls, this valley held a world, and every light was a stranger, and she was about to walk into it alone except for a woman she had known for half a month.
Thren.
Valani said.
Half the story. The other half is inside.
As they began the descent toward the gate, the bell rang, a city crier's bell, sharp and official, cutting through the night's noise, and the crier's voice came up cold and clear on the night air. By order of the Thren Watch. Master Diren, collector of old texts, found dead in his rooms in the Temple District. Murder, murder, hear ye, hear ye. Kale stopped. The name went through her like the cave cold. Diren. The scholar. The one man her mother had named on the ridge above the dales, the one who read the old texts, the one who could tell her what she was, the one.
Thelani.
Her voice came out small.
That's the man. That's the man I was traveling to find.
Thelani was very still.
Then we're too late by a day, little echo. And someone in that city knows it.
They moved toward the gate. At the shadow of the outer wall, under the lantern's edge, a figure stood watching the crowd, a young man in a gray tunic, still as the stone that had gone silent on the green, a scroll in his hand. He did not move. He did not call out. He simply stood in the dark, among the lantern-lit crowd of the living, watching them come. Kale looked at him, and the note in her chest, the one she had pressed down for 19 years, rose once, and fell, and did not answer. Behind her, Thren's lights glittered like 10,000 open mouths. He watched her back.